The truth is always out there, sometimes way out there, with the Midweek Drive team on Siren 107.3 FM.
Quite right, too. Okay, so, William, what is the weather like in Edinburgh at this moment when it's 2 minutes and 22 seconds past 5 o'clock in Lincoln, England?
I like the exactitude of your timekeeping. It is cloudy and muggy. Feels like rain coming on soon.
It does sound, Hannah, as though he's in this great cavernous scenario, right? Like a huge Darth Vader-esque helmet without the sort of things that...
Do you need an inhaler there?
No, you never know these days. But, you know, it's always good to have you on board, William. And this, of course, an auspicious occasion, the first time you've joined us via, as I say, that Skypey thingy, which is great stuff. Not visuals, because we felt that would be too sort of much of a little thing. So it's just keeping us real from that perspective.
I was wearing black tie.
So you should, William, because standards are very important. It's only due to the high temperature that I've decided to actually not put the tie on today, because I felt it was not a tie weather, really. Anyway, moving on. Camo, normally with us from Nashville, can't make it today. Couldn't you just figure it? You know, you set the whole thing up, and no. Winnie Murphy from the Brabham International Horse Trials, again, equally out from that perspective. But, as we said, Phil Rambo will be coming up from Tex Pistols. Now, have you done any research into Tex Pistols at all, William?
Yes, I have. Of course I have. I like doing my homework. In fact, I love homework. Yeah, they're this punkabilly band.
Yes, yeah, exactly. And that's
I am so primed with questions for Mr. Rambo.
Hey, I mean, it's going to be an intriguing thing. It's always nice to welcome a debut to the production. Ed Fortune, so literary editor for Starburst. Arthur Weingarten, who... Well, we may have lost William by that stage. Not in any serious way, don't worry. He might not be for the second hour. He may stick around for the second hour. We don't know. We just have to wait and see how it's going. Tallulah Rendell is joining us around about 20 past six. And then, of course, Phil Dearness, hopefully from Lincoln, New Mexico.
Ooh.
He's on another road trip. It's gearing up for his road excursions, and it's Leonis and Hollyman on the roads. But, of course, that does mean that normally, Natasha, as you're well aware, we launch with a kind of country-themed aspect to launch the show. And clearly, not only did Camo actually withdraw, other events came up, he didn't even have a country music theme to go to us. So I'm going to ask you to make a musical selection, Natasha. It's time you actually sort of raise that bar, and then William can critique it. Or, I mean, we could go for some Tallulah Rendell. She's joining us later on the show. It's entirely up to yourself. What would you like?
Maybe we should go with some Tallulah, just to get us ready and warmed up for her.
Well, yeah, that's a good thing. I mean, does that pass mustard with yourself? I mean, you probably never heard of Tallulah Rendell, and why would you have, William? I mean, you know, an ace graduate and indeed a musical genius who's currently sort of approaching her fourth album, which is Liminal. This is her third album. I'm passing over to Natasha at the moment, which is The Banshee and the Moon. Let's see. Run, Let the River Run. How does that float your boat, William Sitwell?
Yeah, sounds great. I mean, I'm a Tallulah virgin, so I'm licking my lips. Can't wait.
What are your thoughts?
I liked it. Yeah, it was. It was very different. It's also very calming, almost. And you know, it was good.
Natasha.
Yeah, I thought it was really carefree. Just really beautiful notes. Her the melody and her voice is very almost haunting. It's very beautiful.
Midrick Drivett's giving it two thumbs up, but that doesn't matter a hill of beans, as we're well aware. When you actually bring on board Bill Coles to the subject matter, what did you make, William?
I loved it. That's a double thumbs up from me. It was kind of a Kate Bush vibe there. When it started, it sounded a bit like Wuthering Heights. What do we think? Do I sound like an old dinosaur to bring up Kate Bush?
It's a nice line, but a little word of advice. If you are around for the Tallulah Randall piece, for goodness sake, don't mention Kate Bush. She doesn't react well to Kate Bush. Florence and the Machine's not so bad. Kate Bush, she can get a little bit touchy about that, you know. But I mean, basically, it does sound, I think we can see that. From the department of, I can't believe they've posted this on the web. A certain Bill Coles, two new photos added on May the 22nd, actually at 4:23 p.m. At Edinburgh University Cafe, where Bill often works, the levels, lots of bookshelves, lots of books. Unfortunately, all that is left of these books is the spines, chopped in half and then glued together in a uni howl.
No. I love books too much to chop them up like that. It's butchery.
William, what's going on? I mean, for goodness sake, so have the Scots decided to adopt savagery for the next part of the 21st century? What's happening, William?
I don't know. In a university building, it was bad. And I thought, you know, normally you could whine away and you'll never get any reaction. I thought, you know what? I'm going to write to the principal. He's the vice-chancellor of Edinburgh University. And I have now written to him. And this guy called Sir Tim O'Shea. And Sir Tim is going to do something about it, I hope. He'll probably just ignore my note, but if he cares anything for books and his students, then he will do something about it.
Well, there we are. He's clearly not messing about. He's put that into practice, and I think it's fairly. What were they thinking?
I think they're trying to make it look pretty, yeah. But I feel like it'd be pretty if they were real books. Mm. You know, I mean, the disappointment you'd have if you were like, oh, that sounds interesting, and you go to take it to read and be enlightened to a whole new world, and suddenly it's stuck to the wall and there's nothing there.
Comments from the many followers of Bill Coles includes Peter Jones, what the expletive deleted, Robert Twigger, made up name surely, it's a crime, I tell you, and Penny Edge, OMG, no soul. Malcolm Leng actually comes up with, next time you're in Paris, go to Shakespeare's. Is that code, William? Or is that, I mean, presumably you know what these things are.
I've never been to Shakespeare's in Paris. No, I don't think it's a code. By the way, Robert Twigger, he's not, that's not a made-up name at all. He's the genuine article, and he just has out a book this week, and it must be about his tenth book, called Micromastery.
You see, that's what the Midweek Drive team is all about. You see, that sharing of information. And indeed, for a moment we had a moment of micro mastery, but then we sort of switched away into Robert Twigger. We'll get back to Robert Twigger. We can't stop these books now. They're just these stuck books are just continuing on that basis without so much as a by your leave. They're just refusing to move from there. Robert Twigger, micro mastery, introduced by the author, actually, on Facebook. Micro mastery, learn small, learn fast, and find the hidden path to happiness.
Oh.
As a soon-to-be graduate, this could be an ideal postgraduate study, Natasha.
Yes, certainly.
You could take it over to the Asian continents and say, yes, this is the guru. I mean, would you say, William, that Robert should be considered as a possible guest in weeks to come?
You would love him and he would love you. He's a very strange animal, and so he's probably perfect for Sauron.
Again, there's not a lot you can say about that other than stay tuned to Sauron's Midweek Drive on Lincoln's First Community Radio Station. Coming up very shortly, Phil Rambo. those who argue that it's never really gone away. It's just the kind of circulation of the Earth that means we sometimes don't see the sun. Texas and summer sun there. Go down well in Edinburgh, William?
We love Texas up here. Won't have a word said against them.
I should hope so too. Tessa Snotts joined us in the studio. How are you, Tessa?
Hello, I'm very good, thank you.
Fashionably tardy, but that's all good. It's nice to focus through all this. But just in time to actually welcome formally to the production a newbie from the Ace Punkabilly outfit that will be Tex Pistols. We're delighted to say Phil Rambo. Welcome to Siren FM. How are you, Phil?
I'm fine. How are you guys?
We're chilling and generally in awe of a gentleman who spent a lifetime writing and performing your own take on classic rock and folk themes from the original UK band The Winkees. Surely a name, made up name. No. Which influenced The Clash. Two collaborations with Kirsty MacColl, Brian Eno, Mick Ronson, Ellen Foley. Your career has been an eclectic and exciting musical journey. In 2015, we had Whatever Happens to Phil Rambo. You're doing a Siren link, Phil. The career, it's a career high. Whatever Happened to Phil Rambo, named in the top 50 albums of 2015 by Online's Goldmine. Wondrous stuff. So,
God, the way you read it, it sounds so great. Having lived it all, there's probably a few more glitches than make. But we don't want to talk about glitches.
We don't talk about glitches on them. It's a glitch-free zone. We see a glitch, we take it outside, and we let it free into the ether. That's the whole thing. We don't squash the glitches. We just put them away so they're still left in the cosmos. As we already pointed out, up in Edinburgh, this is a lovely connection between Edinburgh, Lincoln, and where exactly are you, Philip Rambo?
Right now, I'm in Camberwell. I'm in South London, mate.
That's what we like to say. And the old Cockney accent come out as well, just like David Beckham in the latest edition of Arthur, the movie. He could do so much wonderful stuff. His dialogue coach must have been Dick Van Dyke. Still, let's not go down this line. William, are you beside yourself with anticipation as we're about to hear some magic from Phil's band, the Tex Pistols?
I am quivering with anticipation.
I
would expect nothing less.
Yeah, exactly. I can see that PR guru extraordinaire Tony McDonough has primed you well for this particular production, and that's great. Can you share with us a little bit about what we're about to hear, though? Because let's do a quick straw poll in the studio. Tessa, Tex Pistols?
I've not heard of them.
No. Hannah, Tex Pistols?
No.
Natasha, Tex Pistols.
Not the Tex Pistols.
Not the other Pistols. I see what you did there. Not the Tex Pistols.
That was good.
It's kind of
a glimmer of.
That's why she did so well in Origins of Modern Britain. You see, she could get that connection, you know, and work the way through that process. Why Tex Pistols? Share with us what we're about to hear, Phil.
In the current incarnation, the reincarnation of the Tex Pistols, very briefly, the Tex Pistols were formed at the end, at the beginning of the 80s, when everybody who's in the band was kind of between things. We'd all done stuff and bands had broken up and, you know, there was a sort of, and we just thought, well, let's have a pickup band. And a pickup band means a bunch of guys who can really play. And there were two rules of the Tex Pistols, which was that we'd only play songs that we knew, and there would be no rehearsing, right? So if it had to be rehearsed, you wouldn't do it. And then another thing is, which just shows how old we are, is that we always insist on getting paid, which we did.
Good heavens. Those were the days, eh? So, musicians getting paid? Lord, it's never going to catch on.
I know. So we did classic tracks, songs that we loved, and we used to play at the borderline, not the borderline, the break for the border, which became the borderline, on a regular basis. And it was just a really cool place. There's a country and western kind of feel to it, and, you know, margarita shots. And in the early 80s and through the 80s, it was a kind of popular place. We never released a record, but we recorded some tracks. And the EP that was released now, with there's a guy who works down the chip shops where he's Elvis, has got four other tracks which were recorded at that time. It was a dour time for the music business, and we weren't playing. I mean, Americana hadn't even been invented as a genre, so if you can believe it.
I bet even running water and electricity in studios was regarded as a luxury that some bands just couldn't actually hope to use. It's amazing.
It's not that long ago. But so I'm not surprised that young people wouldn't have heard of the Text Pistols per se. I would be surprised if anybody who is interested in music hasn't heard of some of the bands. Everybody that is in the Text Pistols has been involved.
We're going to talk about that and more after we ask William those ultimate words. Are you ready for a Cajun? I'll say it again: a Cajun style version of "There's a Guy Works Down the Chip Shop, Swears His Elvis." You may be familiar, of course, with the classic Kirsten call number, but are you set for the Text Pistols with their version featuring original co-writer Philip Rambo on vocals and Sarah Jane Morris on backing vocals? Are you ready, William?
I'm strapped into my seat.
A liar, and I'm not sure about you. A round of applause, please, for Text Pistols. And there's a guy works down the chip shop, swears his Elvis. Quick roam around the studio. Tessa, you've already got the quote of the day for that particular number. It was
a very goey song.
Goey song.
I liked it.
A very
good
goey number. Hannah Brown.
I agree with Tess. I mean, I've never heard the word goey before used in reference to a song, but I understand its meaning and I agree that
goey
it fits.
Goey rhymes with wooey.
Yes.
Zoe.
It fits with this song. Yeah. It's a good song.
Natasha.
Yeah, it was a real foot tapper. Yeah. Really good summary
goey.
Song.
It's, goey and foot
tapper. It's thumbs up from the Lincoln jury comprising folk from Newark, Glinton, just outside Peterborough, and indeed Harwich. It's a lovely coastal place with a sea breeze. And the ultimate thing, though, is what is the score from our Scottish correspondent?
It was fantastic. I can't believe they did that without any rehearsals. I mean, according to rule number two, no rehearsals. Are they completely winging it on that one?
Well, we were winging it. We were winging it all across the world, well, at least from England to Los Angeles, because Pete Thomas, the drummer, lives in L.A., and so it was the modern type of recording where you put it together, do something here, somebody's living room, send it over to Pete, does the drums, comes back, goes back and forth. So what we had in common was, you know, our knowledge of the song, and, you know, as a band, we stick together and put it into a big gumbo, and it came out that way. So it wasn't live. We didn't record it live.
I know, it's just so shocking. I thought for a moment Bill had fallen off his chair. It's all right. Let's give a few name checks to the band, because in addition to yourself on vocals and rhythm guitar, Paul Riley is on vox and bass. And again, he's worked with Chilli Willy, the Red Hot Peppers, with Pete Thomas on drums, Robin Scott, and others, Grant Watkins, vox piano and accordion, Martin Belmont on lead guitar, Bob Loveday on the fiddle, and Pete Thomas is also part of the band. So is this kind of like a super folk rockabilly bands that you've got there, Phil?
I can't argue with that. You know, sure, why not? You know, we're a lot of experience, a lot of great playing.
And the exciting thing is,
I don't know what I'm doing in the band. I think I'm the guy with the, you know, I'm like the kid who brings the ball to the football match. So he won't play, but we're using his ball.
We can't let you get away with that little bit of false modesty. I mean, come on now. You bring the ball, you bring the bass guitar, you bring the challenge there. Were you tapping your toes in Edinburgh, Bill?
Yes, I certainly was. I've got a question. How often do you rip off classical tunes and...
Homage, please, homage. It's homage, not rip off.
Sorry, I didn't know the Lincoln technical term.
Exactly.
How often do you have an homage to Bach or Beethoven and sort of do punkabilly Beethoven?
Every time we play. There's always somebody. No, the Text Pistols don't do a lot of original material. Never did. It was one of the verbotens of the band. We only did and anything that was written before the 70s when we were got going, we would never touch. So it's, you know, it's original, you know, authentic. Punkabilly is what we call it, but it's, you know, sort of rockabilly and country and western classic songs. So one of the things that I need to put in, the reason that we revived, there's a guy who works down at Chip Shop Squares, he's Elvis, is obviously a song very dear to me. I co-wrote it with Kirsty, and thought having a man singing it pointed in the direction of what we were trying to do with the song and the EP, which is to raise awareness and possibly, you know, funds, if possible, if we can make some profit out of selling the CD EP, for prostate cancer. So that's one of the things that I, you know, personally am involved with. And I thought, that's something that we should put into the mix. And that's why Sarah Jane came along and gave her time as well.
Now, Phil, clearly, with that number, I mean, I was hovering, as it said. I mean, and the Midrick Drivettes will confirm, my cursor was hovering over the like button for Text Pistols UK.
Yeah.
But I think it's, I mean, should we click it, Tessa?
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah, okay. Yeah. It's done.
Definitely.
We have officially liked the Facebook page that Text Yay. Pistols UK is there, at Text Pistols UK. Hey, you're pushing, William, aren't you? You're pushing for this. I'll only share it if you also like it as well. So I'm going to actually do this now. I'm going to share it too.
I will like it.
I've done that as well. I've also shared it as well. So, yeah, just marvellous. There aren't many debutant musicians who come on this show that actually get a like and a share. A lot of them get likes.
That's quite special.
Can you get to the sort of share thing? Question for yourself, Natasha.
Yes. I've heard you use a couple of times punkabilly and a couple of times rockabilly. Are they generally interchangeable, or is there a stark difference between the two?
No, there's not. It's a kind of marketing haze, and it sounded good when we came up with it because we're not a rockabilly band because we do a lot of different styles, and it's just that when you've got Pete Thomas as a drummer, his sound over the years, just summarizes the best of what punk music started off being, the punk attitude, but combined with fantastic talent. So over the years, that kind of Pete Thomas, banging it out, which is, from Jake to Bobby to Bonnie Raitt to this, that, and the other, it's a backbone of the sound. So it's, we do country numbers and even some pop classics occasionally in the set, but, it's a gumbo.
in the true Cajun sense, which is wonderful. Yeah. That's a whole sort of sequence. Tessa, thoughts from yourself? Do you think we'll be on the verge of inviting Phil Rambo back to maybe join Sound and Country Vision?
I was literally going to say that. I was thinking they would be perfect, especially with all the crossover music and everything. But we've just had a look at your EP cover or image. And what was the inspiration behind that? It's quite country western, I think.
Well, it was actually born out of necessity, is the mother of invention. We all live in separate places, and we wanted to have something that looked like what we all look like now, and, with Pete being in Los Angeles and Martin in North London and all over the place. And also, we're a bunch of, crusty old guys, and getting together for a photo session is like hard work. So a very talented graphics designer who's my partner in the record company, Malcolm Doherty, I gave it, said he'd do a pastiche of all of us of photos and then redraw it. So I think it looks more like Mount Rushmore.
Yeah, actually, now you say,
I was almost thinking it was Mount Rushmore, really. It's amazing. The great news is, on July the 2nd, you can hear and see Text Pistols performing live in Scarborough, England.
Okay.
St. Helens, Scarborough, the Central Market Hall is where you'll be based. And then it gets even better. 5 days later, a mere 5 days later, London's Balham's Bowls Club. That's Balham, formerly Gateway to the South. I think there's only William Coles who might sort of acknowledge that little reference to Balham, Gateway to the South.
I think Lincoln should be added to the list.
Well, the Combery Festival is there. That's on July the 9th. But clearly Lincoln is missing out here. That's Lincoln, England, as opposed to Nebraska or New Mexico.
Yes, have to make that
funny enough, I don't hear William sort of saying, but Edinburgh needs you as well.
I know.
Yeah. And also, I was thinking, punks, when you say punk, I'm thinking outrageous stuff. And I'm thinking, what is the most outrageous thing that the Text Pistols have done?
Ooh.
Mm-hmm.
Sorry, what did they say that again?
The Sex Pistols are famous for outrage. And what are the Text Pistols, have you got anything outrageous to share with us?
God Save the Duke of Edinburgh, for instance.
Oh, you mean in terms of things happening? Oh, God.
Yeah.
Like experiences that I'm going to get in trouble with everybody in the band.
Philip, you're among friends here. You can ease by. It's okay. We're a nice sort of quiet community, etc. Occasional listening on the window. It's okay. Share with us.
Okay, well, bringing up to, I don't know if this is outrageous, but it really, really floated my boat when Pete Thomas last week sent me an email, because we've done a video of the track, and again, it's kind of, we think it's, a really good video. It was put together across the ocean, and it's got Pete Thomas's daughter, Tennessee Thomas, who's a great drummer, and we've got a guy who's a real Elvis impersonator who works at a cafe. Anyway, we've done the video and it looks really, really nice. Pete sent me an email saying, Phil, a friend of mine used to be Bonnie Raitt's manager. And so I sent him the video and he sent it to Bonnie, and nobody can get over how outrageously she loves this video. Oh. And I went, wow, I'm sorry. There you go. It was like to for Bonnie Raitt to be liking our video is like an achievement at the moment.
Small steps, but obviously greatness will develop and evolve. We've now moved to a stage where I need to ask your good self, Phil, a critical question. But before we actually get to that, I'm going to ask William from Edinburgh,
to put those last two questions to you, which are sort of part and parcel of the whole thing. He's waited for years to deliver these in his own inevitable way. I know, Hannah, you've coached him. Tessa, you're going to look on fondly like a proud parent at this moment as William Coles officially asks Phil Rambo those last two questions. Go.
I have been waiting for this for a long, long time. So, number one, have you enjoyed our telephonic experience?
Yes.
Nice hesitation. Nice hesitation there. Yeah. Not quite sure what's coming up there. Good delivery.
Right.
Question number two. Will you be joining us again?
Oh, if I'm invited, I'd love to.
Hey, round of applause for Phil Rambo. Go and like the band on Facebook. More importantly, actually share the whole package and do all sorts of things. My little question, quite simple. Do you fancy some of the Clash?
Oh, absolutely.
Very good. From Lincoln to London. C'est la vie.
Thanks, guys.
The rain and the truncheon thing, the ice is coming, the sun's zooming in, meltdown expected, the wheat is going thin, engines stop running, but I have no fear, cause London is drowning. I live by the river to the imitation zone. Forget it, brother, you can go in alone. London calling to the zombies of death. Quit holding out and draw another breath. London calling, and I don't want to shout. But while we were talking, I saw you nodding out. London calling, see, we ain't got no hide. Except for that one with the yellowy eyes. The ice is just coming, the sun's zooming in. Engines stop running, the wheat is going thin. A nuclear error, but I have no fear. London is drowning. It was true. London calling at the top of the dial. And after all this, won't you give me a smile? London calling. I never felt so much alike.
I dare you, William Coles in Edinburgh, to actually put that blasting through the streets one fine day across the capital city and just see what kind of response you might get.
I'd be lynched.
I thought you might, but never mind. You have the script. You're in Edinburgh. We're in Lincoln. Our next correspondent is over in the west coast, not of Ireland, of England. He is the literary editor for the world's longest-running magazine of cult entertainment. Would you, Bill Coles, writer extraordinaire, like to introduce our next guest formally to the Midweek Drive?
we are going to introduce Mr. Ed Fortune of Starburst magazine.
Hey!
Hello!
Yes, Ed has returned. And thankfully, Ed, you're safe and sound given the recent challenges that Manchester's obviously been faced with, to use an understatement.
Yes, well, it's Manchester. We carry on.
Absolutely. As a City fan, obviously I'd say that, but that's a different line. Now, I have to say, I've always said Starburst, classy magazine, and top longest-running magazine of cult entertainment. But going to your website, very apt, because something we were going to comment on, Sir Roger Moore, 1927 to 2017, nobody did it better. Of course, this is the year we celebrate 40 years since The Spy Who Loved Me emerged onto the whole system. We were speaking to Shane Rimmer and a number of other folk as we head through this. We've got Annette Andre and Arthur Weingarten, who worked with Roger Moore. We kind of expect our icons to stay with us for quite some periods of time, really. And I mean, I don't know, Tessa, Roger Moore, I mean...
Yeah, very familiar. Yeah. I watched all of his James Bond films.
Yeah.
Mum's a big fan, so I've sat and watched them all over and over again. So it's quite sad news.
Persuaders, Ivanhoe, yeah. Hannah?
It was a shock. I actually went to go on the Starburst magazine website, and that was actually how I found out, seeing that picture in front of me. And I was like, wait, what? Yeah. I got a bit of a shock. I've been a bit of a bubble today.
And Natasha?
Yeah, like, Hannah was quite shocked. I mean, obviously, tragic news in Manchester. I think that with it, he didn't quite get some of the, the news wasn't put out as much as I think it would have been. So, yeah, I found it quite shocking.
But we all have to go. William, as clearly the 21st century's answer to Sir Roger Moore up in Edinburgh, I know the rakish look and the quizzical rise of the eyebrow, which you've developed over the years, are very much Roger Moore idents. Your thoughts?
I based my style largely on Roger, though since I've come up to Scotland, I've got a bit of Sean Connery as well. It's great. The best of both of them.
Clearly. Unlike Doctor Who, clearly the James Bond characters are not dying in a sort of sequence. And as we've always said, Tom Baker should be very worried after William Hartnell and Patrick Troughton, of course Peter Cushing, John Pertwee actually passed into another dimension. But we celebrate their lives. Did you ever meet him, Ed?
Roger Moore? Yeah. I did not. There was an attempt to get him to the Starburst International Film Festival last year, where he wasn't available. Mike Royce, the editor of Starburst magazine, is an enormous fan of Roger Moore, and saw him live just a couple of years ago at the Lowry. You could have, he was floating for the rest of the week, shall we say. He's always been a massive admirer of the man, hence the suit. But yes.
Yeah, no, I mean, again, from my point of view, certainly very inspirational in terms of the roles, the characters he actually took. And latterly, of course, his fantastic work taking over from the late Audrey Hepburn as a UNICEF ambassador. So, again, putting a lot of good back into society and the world as well. You mentioned Film Festival. We're going to be building up to this, and hopefully even more excitements will be happening. We might even have some midweek drive-outs able to on bank holiday weekend in August attend the Starburst International Film Festival. Oh, tickets are now on sale!
If you go on the Starburst website, if you just on the right-hand side, you should be able to find them there.
We have indeed found... You see, there, isn't it? On the right-hand side of the Starburst website. It's wonderful. A kind of... I would almost say pink coloration. So, would you say it's pink, or is it kind of orange? Orangey-red?
Maybe it's like a coral.
Yeah, it's always great to describe colours on the radio because it helps sort of give a little bit of a colour to the audio package, I find.
It makes them feel like they're here with us in the studio.
And who knows? I mean, it's been many a year since Williams has been saying, I'd love to take part in the whole show. Finally, we've actually managed to get it. Well, maybe half the show. I don't know. I mean, you might be sort of probably sending a text saying, I've had enough now. I mean, for goodness sakes, I've been on for 46 minutes, so it's time to go. William, would you like to ask the literary editor for Starburst magazine, Ed Fortune, why he has yet to review any of your novels?
I could ask him that, but first of all, I'd like to ask him how he feels about having his magazine name bandited by a suite.
Oh dear, I have to reset the clock again. We do actually have a clock in the Starburst offices, and every time someone makes an awful food joke, we reset it. Unfortunately, it's never made it past zero. The honest answer is that Dev Skin almost called it Starfall, and he felt it was too negative. and he wasn't aware that cassava sweets were sweet in America at the time. He was only aware of opal fruits. So, yeah. But, no, we have heard that joke.
Sorry, William. All those years working as a Washington correspondent for News International, and still we can't get an uncliched question out. Never mind, it's okay. Looking at in terms of news, there's a release date set for the Charlie's Angels reboot. Now, I wasn't aware that Hannah and Natasha and Tessa had actually sort of sorted their details out to be the reboot, which of course was rebooted itself with Drew Barrymore and others back at the turn of the century. But it seems that, yes, the redo is taking place for June the 7th, 2019, Bill.
Ooh.
Excellent!
Yeah. We've got Elizabeth Banks, who's directing the reboot after she made her full feature film directing debut with Pitch Perfect 2. We also have a range of casting sort of news that are sort of coming together, obviously to welcome back Charlie's Angels into the whole sort of sequence. If I look for the actual cast, we've got the details about various other bits and pieces there, but I don't think we've actually got the names, other than saying that Elizabeth Banks was known as Betty Brant in Sam Raimi Spider-Man trilogy, and also has appeared in the Hunger Games and the Lego movie. So that's all great. Ed, we are also approaching the time of the year where the Arthur C. Clarke Awards will be coming through. Are there any kind of runners and riders which you'd say, I think I would sort of say that's in with a shout, given that you're literary editor for Starburst? I thought we'd deal with a literary thing.
It's an amazing list this year. I mean, normally it's very good, and normally I am a massive fan in general, but it's just cracking. Now, I have to say that when I read After Atlas, I put it down and I basically said, this is the most blatant attempt at getting a Clark Award that I've ever seen. I said as much to Emma Newman, and she was very charming at me, as, you know, as is her wont. But yeah, it's a very, very strong list this year. It really is. I don't think... It's also a very close call, because obviously we have, you know, we have Pulitzer Prize winner on that list. But we also have, I mean, it's just so diverse, so interesting, and actually so wonderfully put together as well. I'm very fond of Nine Fox Gambit by Yoon Ha Lee. I'm actually currently reading its sequel at the moment. And again, Nine Fox Gambit deserves to win. Becky Chambers deserves to win for... it's not Close and Common Orbit, it's the next one, which again is lovely, and it's a wonderful story about identity. And The Gravel Railroad, as I say, is written by Pulitzer Prize winner, it's fantastic. Occupy Me, I have to admit I didn't enjoy, but I understand why lots of people liked it. And I will always have all the time in the world for ERV Tidar's work as well. It's a brilliant list, and there's something there for everything, everyone. If you're not a massive sci-fi fan, and you want something a little bit more intellectual, then there is stuff there. If you want shitty death in space, then Nine Fox Gambit, which is completely amazing. I am veering, because my tastes are for explosions and spaceships and sadness. I'm veering towards After Atlas or Nine Fox Gambit. I suspect it will win. I suspect neither of those will win, however.
Now, far be it from us to actually adopt a formulaic approach to fiction and so on, but I've just made a note of three things, though, which hopefully, William, you've also caught up with. Explosions, spaceships, and sadness. Can we look for you to your next book encompassing some of those, or are you still working on that grand marathon of doing the ride across what's it, the Grand National he was involved with?
It was a Mongolian
marathon
horse,
Mongol Derby.
Yeah, I've never had a crack at sci-fi. It's tricky. It's a really specialist kind of book, which would take me some time to learn. But maybe one day.
Mm-hmm. I think we could have actually sorted this through the magic of Ed Fortune's inspirational literary editorship of Starburst magazine. He could be taking an author who's previously known for romance and wonderful sort of tales and stories and inspirational novels, and actually shift him, nudge him into a sort of science fiction world. It's our kind of evangelical approach, Ed. You're familiar with this.
It's funny funny how many authors will produce a science fiction novel and then immediately pretend it's not.
Yeah.
George Orwell is
Margaret Atwood, we're looking at you.
Yes. Margaret Atwood, who, in fairness, later on in her career did recant, but at the start described it as, you know, the silliness of spaceships, I seem to recall, is roughly the quote.
Mm.
And no, I'm afraid The Handmaid's Tale is definitely one of ours, thank you very much. I will take Brave New World, a book so that I love so much that I named my column after it. And, you know, we'll take 1984. Those are ours, thank you. Mm. That's our job.
Brave New World, Rossum's Universal Robots, The Time Machine, they're all actually science fiction, let's face it. Anyway, let's progress. Natasha, would you like to select a little headline from the Starburst website and we'll dig in depth with this whole system? Anything that floats your boat? So movie news, TV news and reviews, gaming news and reviews, features and interviews, events news and reviews, any particular segment that you sort of...
Yeah, I'm looking at this, what's this Deadpool Bad Blood all about?
Deadpool Bad Blood, which is under features and interviews. We're going to go to that now, and hopefully with the magic of William, we'll find that when it comes to legendary comic book writers and artists, Rob Liefeld is someone who rose to superstardom as the industry hit a huge boom period in the 1990s. Getting involved in the business from a remarkably young age, Liefeld has gone on to have huge success and created some of comics' most beloved characters, such as Deadpool. Is this, Ed, another case of Jerry Siegel and Joe Shuster, basically as the creators, being ignored for years?
Let's be honest, when it comes to Liefeld's interpretation of Deadpool,
yes,
it's iconic, and he was there at the time when, captured the character. I mean, yes, you could say an awful... Let's take another superhero as an example. Let's look at Batman. So that's Bill Finger and Bob Kane. But if I was to ask you to list five iconic Batman stories, which one of those would be a Bill Finger or Bob Kane? Because once you've done the John Byrne, the Grant Morrison, the Alan Moore again, and so on, you start
Frank Miller.
You know, at the Frank Miller, thank you. And you go through that list. When do you get to the originators? Or at which point do you start with the origin story? Mm. Same with Swamp Thing. Or where do you start with the origin story? It's a great origin story.
Whoever knows fear burns at the Swamp Thing's touch. Or is that Man Thing? I always get them confused.
They were roommates at the time, and they stole each other's idea, which
exactly.
is lovely.
Natasha, does that help at all? I mean, as a Marvelette, really, Guardians of the Galaxy, card-carrying Rocket Raccoon soul.
Yeah, no, definitely. I think that'd be a really interesting article to read. I always find it interesting looking at how the originals are written with comic books and how they transgress, be that in later comic books, spin-offs or movies. Mm. And I'd be interested to get your opinion on what you think Ryan Reynolds kind of did with the role. Do you think that stays true to what was originally intended?
He nailed it. He completely nailed it. And he nailed the popular version of Deadpool isn't just some odd, boring assassin. He started off as basically a go at Deadshot from the DC comics. They're pretty much the same character. One is a parody of the other. And what we ended up with was progressive writers just got wittier and sillier and sillier and wittier, and then Ryan Reynolds came along and added comedy to the mix and nailed it. He nailed the character that is popular. The version of Deadpool that is popular is not some somber assassin or some incompetent assassin. He's a wisecracking, smart-ass monster.
Much like Bill Coles has been described in his career. You know, Bill, you're just a wisecracking, smart-ass monster.
We could use Rocket as another example, actually. The original Rocket Raccoon is a rather sad, tragic figure in the 70s comics.
He's been genetically engineered into all sorts of ways. He's only got a short lifespan. He's a tragic figure.
He's a psychiatric nurse originally.
Exactly.
Oh, really?
Yeah. How would you feel if you work for the NHS, happily doing about your business? 24 hours later, we wake up as a raccoon. You know,
they're all meant to be jolly little woodland animals to calm the
calm the patients down.
I'm looking for Squirrel Girl myself, but still, there we are. That's...
I'm waiting for that movie. I don't know who you'd cast, but I would love to.
I have three suggestions already in mind, but let's not go there. Still. Just check out the Facebook images. Bill, thoughts from yourself, or have we actually pushed boundaries that even you didn't believe could be pushed on the Midrate Drive?
I'm interested in how China has pushed the whole comic book market, because there's a huge demand for superheroes in China, and I gather that that is making Hollywood make more superhero films. Is that right?
That is indeed right. If you watch Cut of Iron Man 3... there is an entire sequence that involves a Chinese doctor, and it's there as a product placement advert for a Chinese medical service. And that's why, that scene at the end of Iron Man 3, mild spoilers for Iron Man 3, where he has the shrapnel removed from his heart in the Chinese version, that's done by a famous kind of, TV, Chinese TV doctor, who's promoting a real product in China, and obviously that's cut out for the Western release.
That shocks you, Natasha Armstrong, hasn't it?
My mouth is just hanging open. I'm not quite sure how to respond.
Well, Gideon tells an amazing story about the last time he was in China, when the reason Neil Gaiman's Chew exists is because he was told not to use pandas and not to disrespect authority, so he created a story about a naughty panda. But he was invited by the Chinese government, and the reason he was invited there is because they interviewed a whole load of, techie people in the West, and curious about all the various little science fiction knickknacks and things that were in the offices of places like Apple and Google. And it's because, of course, a love of genre is a love of the imagination, and a love of the imagination is a useful tool for creativity, and creativity is what you need to make technology. So, that you can see their line of logic, and then you get stuff like Six and Lou with the nine body problem, three body problem, even. I'm confusing it with Nine Fox Gambit, with the three body problem, which of course is a massive science fiction novel. It won the Hugo Award. Its sequel, or it's the third in the series, is probably going to win the Hugo again, because the Hugos are fairly predictable sometimes.
They're not as exciting as the Arthur C. Clarke Awards, but, there we have it.
Exciting in a different way, yeah. I would say.
Let's give a drop of the Midrate Drive's hat to Bradley Snelling as well, because we will be hopefully featuring Bradley in a not-too-distant future. He, of course, is responsible for coordinating the Starburst International Film Festival. Bill, you're up again, if that's okay, to bowl those last two questions to Ed Fortune, literary editor for the world's longest-running magazine of cult entertainment and all-round good bloke. That would be Ed Fortune.
Ed, have you had an interesting telephonic experience with Sarah?
Well, this has been absolutely marvellous, and it's been a pleasure to meet you as well, Bill.
Excellent. Well, question two is, are you up for another round, another time?
Absolutely, and always.
It's just going very well. You had Tara Bennett, obviously pioneer from the States, where she sort of could sit in on the basis. Different magazine Tara works for, so it's all right. SFX. But, we still sort of work together. Starburst connects. We'll have to try a Skype with the Starburst team, maybe live from the office. That's another sort of thing we're going through. Meanwhile, to the entire Starburst team, including Ed Fortune and, of course, Ace editor Jordan Royce, a whole heap of others, etc. And certainly to Sir Roger, this one's for you.
Keep it.
taken, of course, from the movie that's 40 years young this year, with Marvin Hamlisch in duty, as far as composing duties are concerned, and something which we would dedicate to Arthur Weingarten. Isn't that right, Arthur? Nobody does it better than your good self.
Thank you.
Or indeed, hopefully if he's still there, I mean, hopefully he hasn't gone as yet, William Coles from Edinburgh. William.
Not gone as yet, but I've got a small child. He's kicking on the door saying, come on, Daddy, take me to the cricket.
Okay. Well, a few moments, because this is the first time Arthur has managed to sort of be connected via San Diego in California to Lincoln, England, to Edinburgh, Scotland. So that's the critical sort of aspect here. So
this is the Atlantic cable all over again.
I feel as though we've just been laying that thing across the base.
Before we go any further, I must say, Annette, who has just come home from your country with walking pneumonia, would like to say a few words about Roger. You know, they were
friends.
And she did the most number of saints and worked with him for so many years.
The Persuaders.
They were great mates.
Absolutely.
So she's here, and then she's going back to bed. That's and she didn't want to say anything.
Well, we're going to send that...
I've dragged myself out just for you, Alex.
Oh, Annette, this is too much. But you quite right. I mean, you were in more episodes of The Saints than any other actress in terms of...
Apparently,
exactly. Also, you were in The Persuaders, of course. Sir Roger wrote the opening to... the foreword, I think, he was looking to put together to the magazines, etc. And yes, a great loss, I think.
I feel, although in recent years, I mean, we haven't been in touch that much. We had lunch with some other people when we were both in London about 4 years ago. Mm. And, you know, there's been an odd email. We used to email quite a bit, but the odd email. And you lose touch a little bit. But I was just on the point of sending him another email. I was telling some people about it in London. Said I really must, you know, see what a jokes he's got and all that sort of thing. Mm. Of course, I didn't get around to it because I wasn't well. And I feel that there is a chunk of my life has gone because he was very influential in... He was a bit of a mentor to me, actually. Mm. You know, when I started doing Randall and Hopkirk, he was... just wonderful in helping to explain to me how you deal with your own series. And my goodness, every word he said was valuable, and I stuck by that. And then, of course, all the wonderful, humorous times we had, you know, and he was a friend for many years. You know, we'd meet here and there, and socially and all of that. And but, you know, you look at it and you say, gosh, that was a part of my life way back.
Yeah.
And now, I still feel if we meet, I mean, it was just as though I'd seen him yesterday. Yeah. You know, it's one of those things, you just start to chat and laugh and do all that.
Absolutely. I mean, William and Edinburgh, any sort of things to add from your own perspective and what Annette's been sharing with us there?
Well, it's must be a sad loss.
Yeah. No, I think so. We'll continue to celebrate, but we, you know, celebrate and take solace in the fact that yes, the body of work and the wealth of work that he is actually sort of provided is still there. And I think we'll be reappraised. I think we'll go there. And
absolutely.
Listen, you are a poorly soul, as we've been saying in major characters. Get well soon, Annette, because you can't come to Britain and then get flu and pneumonia and come back, etc. We've got Dune's audio missive to look forward to. So,
you're absolutely. Well, when I do something, I don't do it by halves.
All right, off to bed.
Exactly. Okay. Thank you, Arthur.
Right. A
round of applause for Annette Andre. We can do that, and I think we might. We will possibly let Bill go as well if he needs to head off. Above. I know it's gutting.
Go.
There are people there, but
the kid is now lying on the floor, drumming his feet on the floor.
Exactly. Arthur, if you'd be kind enough to stay with us, though, we're going to leave.
Yes,
with,
of course.
We're going to have a little musical insertion dedicated to Annette, of course, and to Bill Coles. It's the main theme, of course, from probably his best remembered series, The Saint.
Thank you so much.
And of course, in terms of portraying Simon Templar, the saint, we've had George Sanders. We've had, of course, the legendary Sir Roger Moore, Ian Ogilvy, Val Kilmer. Who would you cast as the saint now, please, Arthur Weingarten? And please don't say Rowan Atkinson.
My bête noire.
No, just because he's done May Gray doesn't mean he can actually deal with that halo. I'm sorry. It's just not on.
I think a guy who could do it, he's ubiquitous now, but Colin Farrell, he's got a wry sense of humor, and that's, you know, everybody has something. I felt that Sean Connery was the quintessential Bond, and Roger himself took, and wisely, a very different eye toward it. He knew that he was... And I don't mean this derogatory, that he was light where Sean was the heavyweight in it. And so he took a humorous and sardonic kind of view of it. And one thing about Roger, we as I mentioned to you, I think, we Annette, I, Roger, and Michael Caine, and on, had the same agent, Dennis Salinger, at ICM for... I was with him for almost 30 years, and Annette as well. And so Roger was, and we would socialize. And Roger was one of those fellows where accolade after accolade, he'd look at you and he would laugh and say, "Let me just tell you one thing. I started out to be a cartoonist, and that's who I am." He understood the humor of things. He could get to the bottom, and he never, never once took it seriously that he was a super, superstar. I mean, witness the fact that he did the UNESCO thing for all those years, going around the world for children and nations in need. This was a real guy. This was a gentleman, a true gentleman. He really was a lovely, lovely man. But I'll tell you one thing, which I'm sure... you couldn't know unless you were part of this golden circle we were. Dennis Salinger was known for the greatest collection of jokes in the world. And everyone from American Henny Youngman, who stole everybody's material, a stand-up comic here, to name it, Morgan Wise, this, all knew Dennis and would call him every once in a while and say, "Listen, I've got to do something tonight, and I've run out of jokes. You got a new wife joke and that." 80% of the jokes came from, in the last 30 or 40 years of his life, from Roger. Roger collected jokes like you don't believe, and wherever he was in the world, he would call Dennis and say, "Okay, I've got six, and I'm running, I'm late, but here's the six," and Dennis would take them in, and then Dennis would start calling about a dozen of his clients whom he knew loved jokes. And so at 10 after 8 every morning, he didn't do Sundays, but 6 mornings at 10 minutes after 8, Dennis would call our house in London, Annette's and mine in London, and give us 4 to 8 new jokes. And 80% of them came from Roger. And we'd say, first of all, "Where's Roger?" He'd say, "Oh, well, he's home in Switzerland now, but he's off to Africa, but he wanted us to have these." And they were riotous. They were riotous jokes. Where he collected them, God knows.
Clearly, we're going to have a whole new scenario where you're going to have Arthur Weingarten's jokes at that telling session. It'll work, you know. Hannah, any questions from yourself?
Well, I was wondering here about his jokes. Do you have a favourite joke that he told you that you could share with us?
One of them I'll do very quickly. One of them that comes to mind, which I always loved. Two fellas walk into a bar, and a bar fellow says, "Hi, guys, what can I get you?" And a fellow says, "I'll have a scotch on the rocks, easy on the rocks." And he says, "And you, sir?" He says, "Well, I'll tell you, I'd like a little trim from the back and not too much over the ears." He says, "What?" He says, "You know, a trim, just a trim, but keep it over the ears. I don't like it across the ears." He says, "What are you talking about?" "Well, I asked you, what do you want to drink?" He says, "And do please, the top, leave the top as it is now. He says, I don't understand. He turns to this fellow. He says, listen, are you guys out of your mind? Unless he tells me exactly what he wants to drink, I'm going to throw you out. He says, oh, please don't, sir. Please don't. He only knows how to speak Erdu.
Yeah. there you go. It's a way forward, and one of these days we'll continue sharing those wonderment. Natasha,
I'm not quite sure what to say after that. That was quite amazing. But it's lovely to hear that, you know, he was such a warm a person as he comes across on the screen. Because nowadays, especially, you often hear that, you know, people who come across one way, they're actually another way in life. So it's lovely.
Oh,
that,
yeah, no. No, Roger was, the next person, she's doing her memoir, and he's written a wonderful foreword for her memoir. But in it, she remembers the things that they did at Shepperton Studios, where they shot a lot of the shows, and she did Randall. And he would, they'd be doing a scene with Mike Pratt and Ken Cope. And they'd be in one of their bedrooms, there'd be a wardrobe, and all of a sudden, in the middle of the scene, because there were connecting doors between the sound stages, Roger would pop out and say, oh, excuse me, hope I'm not intruding. You know, and he was a madcap. He just was a lovely, lovely man who saw humor in the middle of life, and he was obviously a deadly serious guy about his work, and a good producer, and as well as an actor, and a businessman, but he was the most delightful person, and if you were at dinner with him, you literally had to leave the food on your plate, because he'd tell you one funny joke after another. Yeah.
I think it's time we had a round of applause for Sir Roger Moore. He's up there, he's doing wonderful things there, and Port Arthur. Great stuff, and we can continue to work through that process. Well, hopefully we'll be connecting with Phil Leonis in the not-too-distant future. We've still got Tallulah Randall. But Hannah, would you like to resume your duties as question extraordinaire and purveyor indeed, of those last two questions, please?
Have you enjoyed your telephonic link with us this evening?
I absolutely have, and I'm really happy that we could have paid tribute to Roger. I think it's fitting.
Absolutely. So, Arthur, are you up for joining us again in the very near future?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Little bird tells me that as Annette's a bit poorly, that might be next week. It's all very strange, but, you know, it's all good stuff.
Yes.
We'll work our way through that. A round of applause for Arthur Weingart, please. Yay! And Annette. Yay!
Thank you.